Chapter 18. Dressed in dark clothes, Pitt and Giordino left the hotel after a late dinner, making a loud show of asking the front desk where the best neighborhood bars were located. Though foreign tourists were no longer a rarity in Ulaanbaatar, Pitt knew better than to raise suspicions. Casually walking around the block, they settled into a small cafe across from the hotel's rear entrance. The cafe was crowded, but they found a corner table and nursed a pair of beers while waiting for the clock to strike 12. A nearby throng of drunken businessmen warbled ballads in noisy unison with a red-haired barmaid who played a stringed instrument called a yatak. To Pitt's amusement, it seemed as if the song never changed. Korsov appeared promptly at midnight driving a gray Toyota sedan. He barely slowed for Pitt and Giordino to climb in, then accelerated down the street. Korsov took a circuitous route around the city, driving past the large open Sukhbatar Square. The public gathering place in the heart of Ulaanbaatar was named for a revolutionary leader who defeated the Chinese and declared Mongol independence on the site in 1921. He would have probably been disappointed to know that a local rock band surrounded by teens in grunge attire was the main draw as Korsov drove by. The car turned south and soon left the city center traffic as Korsov drove through darkened side streets. "I have a present for you on the back seat," Korsov smiled, his buck teeth gleaming in the rearview mirror. Giordino searched and found a couple of weathered brown jackets folded on the seat, topped by a pair of battered yellow hard hats. "They'll help ward off the evening chill and make you look like a couple of local factory workers." "Or a couple of skid row hobos," Giordino said, pulling on one of the jackets. The worn coat was moth-eaten in places, and Giordino felt like his muscular frame would burst the shoulder seams. He smiled when he saw that the sleeves on Pitt's jacket came up 6 inches short. "Any all-night tailors in the neighborhood?" Pitt asked, holding up an arm. "Ha! Very funny," Korsov laughed. He then reached under the seat and handed Pitt a large envelope and a flashlight. "An aerial photo of the area, courtesy of the Ministry of Construction and Urban Development. Not very detailed, but it gives you a rough layout of the facility." "You've been a busy boy this evening, Ivan," Pitt said. "With a wife and 5 kids, you expect me to go home after work?" He laughed. They reached the southern fringe of the city, where Korsov turned west, following alongside a set of railroad tracks. As they passed Ulaanbaatar's main train station, Korsov slowed the car. Pitt and Giordino quickly studied the photograph under the glow of the flashlight. The fuzzy black-and-white aerial photograph covered a 2-square-mile area, but Korsov had circled the Avarga facility in red. There wasn't much to see. 2 large warehouse buildings sat at either end of the rectangular compound, with a few small structures scattered in between. Most of the yard, which was walled on the front street and fenced on the rear and sides, was open-air storage for pipes and equipment. Pitt tracked a rail spur that ran out of the east end of the yard and eventually met up with the city's main rail line. Korsov turned off the headlights and pulled into a vacant lot. A small roofless building sat at the edge, streaked with black soot marks. A former bakery, it had long ago caught fire and burned, leaving only singed walls as its skeletal remains. "The rail spur is just behind this building. Follow the tracks to the yard. There is just a chain-link gate over the rail entry," Korsov said, handing Pitt a small pair of wire cutters. "I'll be waiting at the train depot until 3. Then I'll make a brief stop here at 3:15. Any later, and you are on your own." "Thanks, Ivan." "Don't worry. We'll be right back," Pitt replied. "Okay. And please remember one thing." Korsov grinned. "If anything happens, Please call the U.S. Embassy, not the Russian Embassy. Pitt and Giordino made their way to the burned-out building and waited in the shadows for Korsov's taillights to disappear down the road before moving around back. A few yards away, they found the elevated rail spur running through the darkness and began following the tracks toward an illuminated facility in the distance. You know, we could be back sampling the local vodka in that cozy cafe, Giordino noted as a chilled gust of wind blew over them. But the barmaid was married, Pitt replied. You'd be wasting your time. I've never yet found drinking in a bar to be a waste of time. As a matter of fact, I have discovered that time often stands still while in a bar. Only until the tab arrives. Tell you what, let's find Teresa and her pals, and the first bottle of Stoli is on me. Deal. Walking several feet to the side of the railroad tracks, they moved quickly toward the facility. The gate across the rail spur was, as Korsov described, a swinging chain-link fence padlocked to a thick steel pole. Pitt pulled the wire cutters from his pocket and quickly snipped an inverted L shape in the mesh. Giordino reached over and pulled the loose section away from the fence so Pitt could crawl through, then scampered in after him. The rambling yard was well lit, and despite the late hour, a steady buzz of activity hummed from within. Keeping to the shadows as best they could, Pitt and Giordino moved alongside the large fabricated building on the east end of the yard. The building's sliding doors opened to the interior of the yard, and the men crept toward the entrance, pausing behind one of the large doors. From their vantage point, they had a clear view of the facility. To their left, a dozen or so men were working near the rail line, milling over four flatbed rail cars. An overhead crane loaded bundled sections of 4-foot diameter pipe onto the first rail car, while a pair of yellow forklifts loaded smaller drill pipe and casings onto the other cars. Pitt was relieved to see that several of the men wore mangy brown jackets and battered yellow hard hats that matched their own. Drill pipe for an oil well and pipeline to transfer it to storage, Pitt whispered as he watched the loading. Nothing unusual there. Except they have enough materials to drill to the center of the earth and pipe it to the moon, Giordino mused, gazing across the yard. Pitt followed his gaze and nodded. Acres of the yard were jam-packed with 40-foot sections of the large diameter pipe stacked up in huge pyramids that towered over them. It was like a huge horizontal forest of metal trees cut and stacked in an orderly sequence. A side section of the yard was filled with an equally impressive inventory of the small diameter drill pipe and casings. Turning his attention to the open warehouse, Pitt inched around the corner and peered in. The interior was brightly illuminated, but Pitt saw no signs of movement. Only a portable radio blaring an unrecognizable pop tune from a small side office indicated the presence of any workers. Striding into the warehouse, he walked behind a truck parked near the side wall and took inventory with Giordino beside him. A half dozen large flatbed trailers occupied the front of the building, wedged between two dump trucks. A handful of Hitachi heavy construction excavators and bulldozers lined the side wall, while the rear of the building was sectioned off as a manufacturing area. Pitt studied a stack of prefabricated metal arms and rollers that were in various stages of assembly. A nearly complete example stood in the center, resembling a large metal rocking horse. Oil well pumps, Pitt said, recalling the bobbing iron pumps he used to see as a kid dotting the undeveloped fields of Southern California. He noted that they appeared shorter and more compact than the type he remembered, which were used to pump oil out of mature wells that were not pressurized enough to blow the black liquid to the surface on their own. Looks more like the makings of a merry-go-round for welders, Giordino replied. He suddenly nodded toward a corner office where they could see a man talking on the telephone. Pitt and Giordino were creeping behind the cover of one of the flatbed trucks and inching toward the warehouse entrance when two more voices materialized near the door. The two men quickly ducked down and scurried around the back of the flatbed and knelt behind its large rear wheel. Through the wheel well, they watched as two workers strolled by on the opposite side of the truck, engaged in an animated conversation as they walked to the office in back. Pitt and Giordino quickly moved through the line of trucks and exited the building, regrouping behind a stack of empty pallets. Any one of those flatbeds could have been at Lake Baikal, but there was nothing that resembled the covered truck we saw at the dock, Giordino whispered. There's still the other side of the yard, Pitt replied, nodding toward the warehouse on the opposite side of the facility. The other building sat in a darkened section of the yard and appeared sealed shut. Together, they moved off toward the second building, threading their way through a small collection of storage sheds that dotted the northern side of the yard. Midway across, they approached a cluster of sheds and a small guard office that marked the main entrance to the complex. With Giordino on his heels, Pitt circled well clear of the entrance, then picked his way closer. Stopping at the last shed, which contained a bin full of grease-stained yard tools, they studied the second warehouse. It was the same dimension as the first warehouse, yet devoid of activity. Its front bay door was sealed shut, as was a small doorway to the side. What also made the building different was that an armed guard patrolled the perimeter. What's worth guarding at an oil field depot? Giordino asked. Why don't we find out? Pitt stepped over to the tool bin and rummaged through its contents. Might as well look the part, he said, hoisting a sledgehammer off the rack and toting it over his shoulder. Giordino picked up a green metal toolbox and emptied its contents, save for a hacksaw and monkey wrench. Let's go fix the plumbing, boss, he muttered, following after Pitt. The twosome marched into the open and toward the building's facade as if they owned it. The guard initially paid little attention to the two men, who, in their ragged coats and banged-up hard hats, looked like any other workers in the yard. But when they completely ignored his presence on the way to the smaller entry door, he snapped into action. Stop! He barked in Mongolian. Where do you think you're going? Giordino did stop, but only to bend down and retie his shoelace. Pitt kept walking toward the door as if the guard did not exist. Stop! The guard yelled again, shuffling toward Pitt as his hand reached for his holster. Pitt kept walking until the guard was only a step away, then he slowly turned and smiled broadly at the man. Sorry. No habla, Pitt said, shrugging his shoulders benignly. The guard contemplated Pitt's Caucasian features, an indecipherable phrase, with a look of utter confusion. Then the blunt side of a green toolbox arced out of nowhere and struck him in the side of the head, knocking him cold before his body could hit the ground. I think he bent my toolbox, Giordino said huffily, rubbing a large dent on the end of the green case. Maybe he's got insurance. I think we might want to find a different resting place for Sleeping Beauty, Pitt replied, stepping around the body. He walked over and tried the handle on the entry door, but found it locked. Hoisting the sledgehammer, he swung the iron head against the door handle with a punishing blow. The lock smashed free of the door jamb, and Pitt easily kicked the door open. Giordino already had the guard's torso in his arms and dragged the unconscious man through the doorway and deposited him to the side as Pitt closed the door behind him. The interior was dark, but Pitt flicked on the light switches next to the door and flooded the interior with fluorescent light. To his surprise, the building was nearly empty. Just two flatbed haulers sat side by side in the middle of the floor, taking up a fraction of the otherwise deserted warehouse. One of the flatbeds was empty, but the other held a large protruding object covered from view by a canvas tarp. The object under wraps had a streamlined shape resembling a subway car. It was nearly the opposite in dimension of the jaggedly vertical object that they had seen concealed on the truck at Lake Baikal. "Doesn't look like the present we were looking for," Pitt remarked.
"Might as well unwrap it and find out what the big secret is," Giordino replied, pulling out the hacksaw from his battered toolbox.
Jumping onto the flatbed, he attacked a maze of ropes that secured the canvas in a mummy wrap. As the cut ropes fell away, Pitt reached up and yanked at the canvas covering. As the canvas tarp fell to the floor, they stood staring at a tube-shaped piece of machinery that stretched almost 30 feet long. A tangled maze of pipes and hydraulic lines ran from a large cylinder head at the front end to a frame support at the tail. Pitt walked around and studied the prow of the device, finding a circular plate 8 feet in diameter studded with small beveled disks.
"A tunnel boring machine," he said, rubbing one of the cutter heads that was worn dull from usage.
Korsov mentioned the company had some mining interests.
"I've heard there are some rich copper and coal reserves in the country."
"A rather expensive piece of equipment for a hack oil company." A shrill whistle suddenly sounded from somewhere across the yard. Pitt and Giordino glanced toward the door and immediately saw that the guard had disappeared.
"Somebody woke up and ordered room service without telling us," Pitt said.
"I don't have any change for a tip."
"We've seen all there is to see. Let's go meld into the woodwork." They sprinted to the door, which Pitt opened a crack to peer out. Across the yard, a trio of armed guards was headed toward the warehouse in a jeep. Pitt recognized the man in the back seat rubbing his head as the guard Giordino had clobbered. Pitt didn't hesitate, throwing open the door and bolting out of the building with Giordino on his heels. They turned and ran toward the maze of stacked pipes that paralleled the railroad spur. The pursuing guards shouted across the yard, but Pitt and Giordino quickly disappeared behind the first pallet of pipes.
"I hope they don't have dogs," Giordino said as they paused to catch their breath.
"I don't hear any barking."
Pitt had instinctively grabbed the sledgehammer on the way out the door and held it up to show Giordino they weren't completely defenseless. He then surveyed the stacks of pipe around them and forged an exit strategy.
"Let's maze our way through the pipes to the rail line. If we can skirt around the loading platform undetected, then we ought to be able to make it back to the gate while they're still sniffing around here."
"I'm right behind you," Giordino replied.
They took off again, skirting in and around the mammoth stacks of pipe that stood 20 feet high. A few yards behind, they heard the shouts of the guards as they fanned out in pursuit. Fording through the dozens of huge pallets was like snaking through a dense sequoia forest. The pursuers were at a decided disadvantage. Making a beeline as best he could, Pitt steered them in the direction of the railroad tracks, stopping again as they approached the last line of pallets. The rail spur ended just a few feet away, while just beyond was the southern boundary of the compound, marked by a 12-foot brick wall.
"No chance at scaling that," Pitt whispered. "We'll have to follow the tracks."
They jumped over the railroad tracks and moved toward the loading ramp at a fast walk so as not to attract attention. Ahead of them, the loading of the flat cars continued unimpeded. The workers had stopped briefly when the security alarm sounded, but resumed their loading when they saw the guards driving to the warehouse building. Pitt and Giordino approached the dock, walking along the backside of the flat cars with their hard hats pulled low over their eyes. They were nearly past the first of the three rail cars when a foreman jumped off the flat car, landing a few steps from Giordino. The workman lost his balance, stumbling into Giordino and bouncing off the stocky Italian like he'd hit a concrete wall.
"Sorry," the man muttered in Mongolian, then looked Giordino in the face.
"Who are you?"
Giordino could see the glint of alarm register in the man's face and immediately extinguished it with a right cross to the chin. The man slumped to the ground just as a loud shout erupted in front of them. Standing on the next flat car, two other workers witnessed Giordino punch out their supervisor and yelled out in bewilderment. The workers turned and yelled across the yard, waving their arms at the security jeep, which was just pulling away from the warehouse.
"So much for a stealthy getaway," Pitt quipped.
"I swear, I was just minding my own business," Giordino muttered.
Pitt peered down the rail line toward the gate they had cut through. If they took off at a sprint, they had a chance to reach it before the jeep cut them off, but the guards would be right on their tail.
"We need a diversion," Pitt said quickly. "Try to attract the attention of the jeep. I'll work on getting us a lift out of here."
"Attracting attention won't be a problem." Together, they ducked under the rail car and crawled to the other side. Pitt hesitated in the shadows while Giordino jumped into view and started running back toward the stacks of pipes. A second later, several dock workers came streaking by after him, dust and gravel rising from their feet inches from Pitt's face. He looked out and saw the security jeep make a sudden turn, its headlights capturing Giordino's image in the distance. It was Pitt's turn to move now, and he jumped from beneath the flatbed and ran toward the next rail car in line. One of the forklifts was setting a pallet of pipe casings on the flatbed when Pitt charged toward the driver's compartment. He still carried the sledgehammer with him and made a flying, downward swing as he sprang into the cab. The heavy mallet head struck the foot of the operator before Pitt even landed. The startled driver stared at Pitt with wide eyes before the pain from two broken toes registered in his brain. Pitt raised the hammer as a first cry of agony trickled from the man's lips.
"Sorry, pal, but I need to borrow your rig," Pitt said.
The stunned operator flew out the opposite side of the open cab as if he had wings, disappearing into the darkness before Pitt could wield another blow. Pitt dropped the hammer and slid into the seat, quickly backing the forklift away from the rail car. He had driven a forklift decades before while working at a car parts distributor in high school, and the controls quickly came back to mind. He whipped the forklift around on its lone rear wheel and stomped on the accelerator, aiming the twin prongs in the direction of Giordino. Pitt's partner had streaked toward the maze of stacked pipes until he saw one of the armed security guards emerge from the nearest piling. The jeep was descending from the center of the yard with the two other guards, while a trio of dock workers was chasing him from behind. Despite the odds, Giordino quickly figured his best chance was against the unarmed workers trailing him. Grinding to a stop in his tracks, he turned and charged directly at the first man in pursuit. The startled worker hesitated in surprise as Giordino suddenly bore into him, driving his shoulder into the man's stomach. It might as well have been a bull charging a rag doll. A gasp of air wheezed from the man's lips, then his face turned blue as he fell limp across Giordino's shoulders. The tough Italian didn't miss a step, bulling forward with the dead weight into the second worker, who was following only a step behind. The three bodies collided with a sickening thud, Giordino using the body over his shoulder to soften the blow from the second man. In a tumble of arms and legs, the three bodies fell to the ground in a heap, Giordino somehow landing on top. In an instant, he was on his feet, wheeling to face the next pursuer. But the third dock worker, a wiry man with long sideburns, had deftly sidestepped the mass of bodies and whirled behind Giordino. As Giordino rose, sideburns sprang onto his back and cupped an elbow around his throat. A simultaneous fusion of forces converged on him as the jeep screeched to a halt just inches away while the guard on foot approached yelling with his gun drawn. Realizing he could no longer fight his way out, Giordino relaxed under the grip of the headlock, thinking that this was not quite the end of the diversion that he had in mind.
Staring through the windshield, he noticed the driver of the Jeep glare triumphantly as if he had just bagged a trophy caribou. The smug guard, obviously head of the security force, started to climb out of the Jeep, then hesitated with a quizzical look on his face. The look turned to horror as he turned toward a bright yellow blur flashing out of the darkness. Blazing across the yard, Pitt had the forklift floored and aimed for the driver's side of the Jeep. A warning cry erupted from the Jeep's passenger, who tried to scramble clear, but there was nothing the driver could do. The twin forks sliced into the Jeep like it was made of cheese, penetrating just fore and aft of the driver's seat. The nose of the forklift then bashed into the door sill, mashing the Jeep sideways for several feet and sending its occupants airborne out the opposite side. The two guards tumbled to the ground as the Jeep skidded to a halt beside them. Pitt quickly jammed the forklift in reverse and backed away from the mangled car. With the shock of the collision just in front of them, Giordino felt Sideburns' grip around his neck loosen a fraction, and he reacted immediately. Shoving the man's wrist up, Giordino flung his free elbow into the worker's ribs. It was enough to stun the man and allow Giordino to slip his grasp. Giordino turned and ducked as Sideburns threw a roundhouse punch, which he countered with a hard jab below the man's ear. The smaller man quickly dropped to his knees, gazing at Giordino with a dazed look in his eyes. That still left the security guard on foot. Giordino glanced at the armed man a few feet away and was relieved to see that he was no longer pointing the gun in his direction. The guard had instead turned his attention toward the forklift, which was now racing directly toward him. The guard fired two panicked shots in the general direction of the cab, then leaped out of the path of the charging vehicle. Ducking low in the cab, Pitt heard the shots whistle over his head, then yanked hard on the steering wheel as he passed by the guard. The nimble forklift quickly spun around, and in an instant, Pitt was back on the heels of the man. The surprised guard stumbled as he now tried to flee the rabid forklift and fell face down in its oncoming path. Pitt quickly lowered the front prongs and moved in for the kill. The guard should have rolled to the side, but instead tried to stand up and run. As he rose, one of the prongs struck him along the backside and rode up his coat. Pitt jammed the lift lever and elevated the twin prongs above the cab, hauling the guard up into the air with them. Kicking and flailing, the guard dropped his gun as he desperately grabbed at the prong to keep from falling to the ground. "You know, you could hurt someone with this thing if you're not careful," Giordino said, jumping into the cab and grabbing an overhead roll bar for support. "Safety first, I always say." "Or is it second?" Pitt replied. He had already spun the forklift around and was accelerating alongside the railroad tracks toward the gate. As he was passing by the loading dock, several workers stepped forward, then jumped back as the forklift raced by, the security guard dangling from the elevated prong and shouting out for help. Pitt spied a high stack of oil drums ahead and veered the forklift toward the pile. "End of the line for our first-class passengers," he muttered. Driving straight for the drums, he slammed on the brakes when just a few yards away. The forklift screeched and skidded, banging to a jolting stop against the lower wall of drums. Dangling from the elevated prong, the sudden stop jerked the security guard forward, sending him flailing like a bird into the upper stack of oil drums. As he backed the forklift away, Pitt heard mumbled curses from the stack that told him the guard was still alive. Pitt turned the forklift back toward the railroad tracks and mashed the round accelerator to the floorboard. Shouts could be heard from the scene of the wrecked Jeep, and Pitt glanced over his shoulder to see that two of the men were on their feet and chasing after them. The popping sound of gunfire echoed from behind, and a few of the rounds found the body of the forklift with a metallic thud.
But the humming electric forklift buzzed quietly along, spreading the distance between itself and the angry pursuers. Nearing the gate, Pitt inched the forklift closer to the railroad tracks until the right wheel was bouncing over the wooden ties. "Ramming speed," Giordino said, eyeing Pitt's move and bracing himself for impact. Pitt steered for the left edge of the gate and gripped the steering wheel tight. The left prong struck the gate support post head-on, severing through the lower metal hinge as the right prong sliced through the metal fencing. The nose of the forklift then rammed into the gate with the full force of its momentum. The impact drove the forklift into the air momentarily before it mashed the gate off its hinges and sent it flying off to the side. Pitt had to fight the controls to keep the forklift from flipping as it burst out of the facility. The battered forklift bounded over the tracks and onto the gravel track that sided the rail line before settling onto its three wheels. Pitt steered down the gravel path, never lifting his foot off the accelerator. "I hope our taxi driver is early," Pitt yelled. "He better be. We're not going to outrun anybody much longer." Peering back toward the facility, Giordino spotted the headlights of another vehicle skirting the railroad tracks toward the battered gate. Pitt muscled the forklift's controls as it bounced wildly over unseen ruts and rocks in the starlit darkness. Not wanting to give any pursuing shooters an exact target, he had flicked off the headlights when they broke clear of the facility. The darkened shadow of the burned-out bakery atop the hill finally appeared ahead, and Pitt skidded the forklift to a stop. "Everybody off," he said, holding the brake down until they came to a complete stop. Jumping down, he searched the ground around him until finding a large, flat rock. Turning the steering wheel of the forklift so it aimed down the gravel track, he dropped the rock on the accelerator and jumped back. The yellow forklift sprung down the path, humming quietly as it disappeared into the night. "A shame. I was starting to get attached to that machine," Giordino muttered as they quickly scrambled up the hill. "Hopefully a camel herder in the Gobi Desert will put it to good use." Cresting the ravine, they ducked behind a crumbling wall of the bakery and peered around the front lot. Korsov's car was nowhere to be seen. "Remind me to badmouth the KGB next time we're in public," Giordino said. A half mile down the road, they suddenly eyed the red flash of a pair of taillights, illuminated from a tap on the brakes. "Let's hope that's our boy," Pitt said. The duo took off from the building and ran down the road at a sprint. Approaching the crunching sound of tires on gravel, they jumped to the side of the road and hesitated as a car with its headlights off crept out of the darkness. It was the gray Toyota.
"Good evening, gentlemen."
Korsov grinned as Pitt and Giordino climbed into the car. His breath filled the interior with the odor of vodka.
"A successful tour?"
"Yes," Pitt replied, "but our hosts wished to follow us home." Behind the bakery, they could see the flash of a bouncing headlight beam from down the hill. Without a word, Korsov whipped the car around and sped off down the road. In minutes, he was barreling down a mix of back road city streets before suddenly appearing at the rear of their hotel.
"Good night, gentlemen," Korsov slurred. "We shall reconvene tomorrow when you can give me a full report."
"Thanks, Ivan," Pitt said. "Drive safe."
"But of course."
As Pitt slammed the door shut, the Toyota burst off down the street, disappearing around a corner with its tires squealing. Walking to the hotel, Giordino suddenly stopped and pointed. Across the street, music and laughter wafted from the little cafe, still bustling at the late hour. Giordino turned to Pitt and smiled.
"I believe, boss, that you owe me a diversion."